So, Matt, there is a specific storyline in The Last Jedi that I watched The Last Jedi a few years ago, and I skipped almost every scene of this particular storyline, and I thought to myself, you know, this movie is kind of decent. It's not half bad. And I realized that this storyline was like my big complaint about this movie. But before I tell you what it is, let me just say thank you again for joining us on this debate. We're so glad that you're here to listen to The Last Jedi Final Debate here with Matt and I. Matt loves it. He's the light side. I hate it. I'm the dark side. And we're here to have a great debate. If you like this show, please make sure you subscribe and share it with another Star Wars fan. If they hate it or love it, that's okay, because we're here for both of you. And maybe we'll change some minds. Maybe we'll change some hearts. Maybe we won't. We'll have to see. So welcome back. So Matt, this particular storyline that I completely skipped is Rose and Finn and the Canto Bite storyline. For me, this is just like a major detractor to the entire film of The Last Jedi. And I think it starts, for me, I think it starts when Finn is like myopically trying to get away from the resistance. He's going to that escape pod, odd interactions with Rose, and it just kind of tumbles out from there. They get Poe involved. They go out to the Canto Bight, and they have all of this little adventure stuff, happen to find a codebreaker, and they get back to the First Order, and then they're captured, but then somehow they make it back to the Resistance. So for me, like, it's like that moment when this storyline for me is Finn has decided I'm going to leave the Resistance to find Rey, and then Finn and Rose crash back down into the First Resistance base, and that's kind of the storyline of Canto Bight for me. And it, for me, it's just, man, I can't, if I skipped it, I actually think The Last Jedi is not half bad. It has a lot of merits, but this is such a detractor for me that really brings it down.
Okay. I mean, that is fair and fine. Like, honestly, I'm of the mind, and to you listeners, Aaron kind of alluded to this. Hopefully we've got both sides listening to this. My hope of these conversations is not so much to convince you to love The Last Jedi, which I certainly hope to do. And I secretly, you know, that's my secret goal. But more than anything, it's invite and hopefully inspire folks to discuss things that they may disagree on in a good and healthy way, because such is Star Wars, and we can just love things and not love things and still love the bigger thing. Canto Bight, I understand a little bit. And I don't even know, I guess we could get into your gripes about it. From a higher level, I think there are a couple things at play before we get deeper into the actual story arc that we can address. But you brought up an interesting word in the last episode that we had, and that word is verisimilitude, right? And if I'm summarizing it correctly, it's this sort of established understanding of the way things are, the way the audience understands them, by expressed rules or expressed detail that help sort of tie and bring you in and make you feel like this is a very real thing.
Yes.
And the more that you break, the less real it feels. And that's where when someone talks about, like, oh, this happened and it took me out of it, that's really sort of what they're that's what they're referring to, right?
Exactly. Yep.
And I think those points are absolutely valid. I feel like it's hard to argue with someone who's like, yeah, it took me out of it. It's like, you can't tell them that they're wrong, right? But I do think there is a spectrum of grace that you can give to verisimilitude. And I'll explain that. Up to the point that Star Wars had arrived in 2017, up until 2017, I would say that this is the most egregious departure or offender, I should say, of verisimilitude, and that it introduced some very earth familiar things that, not that Star Wars is immune to that completely, but it was probably the closest to earth things that might take one out of Star Wars to where they're like, that looks like a tuxedo that I would wear, you know? And we've seen the Star Wars high class, and it looked very different when George Lucas did it in, like, the prequels, right?
Right.
And I feel like that was, up until this movie, that was probably the biggest departure from what we knew as Star Wars. Like, we hadn't seen the Galactic Senate. We hadn't seen this higher class. And where that was a little bit different was he still sort of tried to make it feel otherworldly. Like the gowns and the costuming that just felt like, didn't feel Star Wars-y, but it also felt different enough where it's like, okay,
yeah,
sure.
Padme's hair, of course.
Yeah, exactly. And so this one was like, oh shoot. So there's a casino planet or a casino city on a planet that has people that have very similar sensibilities as the high class of Earth. That is jarring. And to those of the people who are more forgiving of it, like me, I'd put myself in that category. I'll openly confess it. It's almost like more of a, sure, I guess, right? Even when it might not be my favorite thing, it's like, okay, sure, someone in the galaxy probably has a tuxedo. Fine, right? But I could see how, like, when faced with that the first time, it's like, this kind of speaks to the point that you made last episode where it's like, there are things that The Last Jedi does where it flips what we knew about Star Wars and does like a reverse of it. Mm-hmm. And I would view this as sort of like that reverse of Mos Eisley, where you have this hive of scum and villainy that's like grungy and gross and low class. And then you have the grungy and gross of the high class, right?
Yes.
And it's the exact opposite.
Yeah, even the music in the casino scene is very reminiscent of the cantina music as well. So there's a very deliberate connection there between the Mos Eisley cantina and, I mean, it Canto Bight cantina. Like, I don't know how you get any closer than that, but the music there is definitely draws that connection.
Yeah, and like I remember feeling that, and this is to me, and Rian Johnson nerds would probably disagree with this, but like, this is maybe the scene where they enter the casino is probably where I see most of his fingerprints because he's a film nerd. Mm. And it felt like he was kind of like riffing on a bunch of different like film history callouts that kind of takes you out for a minute. It's like, this doesn't feel like a Star Wars shot. This feels like a something else shot, even though it's in a Star Wars movie, which is cool because like I like that type of thing, but also this is a Star Wars movie, you know. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I think you spoke to like Finn sort of about to desert the Resistance to go search for Rey. And that's kind of where I want to start my take on this. And I also want to give you the floor to like address anything that has discussed before. But like, I feel like one thing that people haven't liked about The Last Jedi is as he's worked to subvert expectations, he did interesting things with characters where it's like, with Finn, it's like, oh, he's leaving? And it's like, I don't love that. Like, why is this dude who, like, left the First Order, you know?
Yeah, it fits his character. He's a runner, right? He's a runner. And we kind of have compassion for that when he decides he's going to leave the First Order. It's like, yay, yeah, come to the light side. And then he's going to leave the Resistance. And we're like, God, you are a coward. Like, what is going on here? But anyway, keep going.
Yeah. Well, I mean, bottom line, he was going to try to leave, right? Mm. And I view this side quest as his, well, I guess it's staying in the big picture. Like, this is one of the three arcs that converge at the Holdo maneuver. And so you have, it starts a side quest, but it's one of three sort of storylines that we're following through the movie. And this side quest for people, just so everyone's fully clear and that I'm fully clear, I know people who love this movie that don't like the storyline. So I'm about to defend the storyline even to people who like this movie. And the reason why I defend it is because, and I mentioned last episode, you have characters who go from point A to point B from the movie, very different characters. And to me, this is Finn and this is his story arc actually buying into the Resistance. Whereas he left the First Order, he knew it was bad. And then he, like you said, he kind of became a runner. And I guess some people might have expected that in this episode, he's just bought in magically. Like, oh, I was the First Order, now I'm going to fight the First Order immediately. Whereas this movie is kind of like pumping on the brakes there. Like, why would he join? Why would he immediately, you know, he comes from a brainwashed First Order upbringing. And now he's just going to magically be part of this resistance. And so to me, Canto Bight is the story of how Finn actually buys in to be a soldier for the resistance.
Yeah, as you say that, the thing that I think of is at the end when Luke Skywalker has kind of those, you know, Kylo Ren says, hey, these three things. And then Luke's like, every word you just said is wrong. And when the camera is showing Finn at the end, Luke is saying, like, the war has just begun, right? And I think you make an interesting point there where Finn is like, he's not really decided what side he's going to be on. He's kind of been whatever was most convenient for him. And hey, it just so happened that running to the resistance was very convenient. And now he's got this little tracker thing and he's going to run to Rey because Rey is the most convenient for him. And then he kind of sees the both sides of war and the gray morality of it that there can be, and decides, no, there actually is a good side and a bad side. And I'm going to join the good side here. I can see that. There is that scene where they're in the ship after they've left Canto Bight. And I guess we're not going to take this chronologically. I don't know. There's the Codebreaker dude. He's going through and he's like, the owner of this ship was selling weapons to the bad guys. And then you see, I think it's an X-Wing or something. He's like, and the good guys, right? And so he's kind of making this point of like good and bad. They're just labels. You just got to, you just got to survive and pick a side. Like, this is kind of what the Codebreaker is trying to tell him. And I can see there's some merit there for Finn's growth. I can see that, sure. But for me, this was one of those moments that, as we said before, broke me out of the story. It made me less enchanted, I think is the word that Tolkien would use, and brought me down to a level of merely suspending my disbelief and being aware that I was in a story. Because like Star Wars, like most mythologies and legends, is very clear on bad and good, right? What is good and what is bad? What is right? What is evil? And we tend to grab onto those myths and legends because they are supposed to teach us what is good and what is bad, and to hopefully encourage us and inspire us to choose the good over the bad. And Star Wars definitely was that. I mean, you watch the original trilogy and like, yeah, little farm boy, it becomes an orphan when Nat and uncle get killed, and Empire is killing these sand people and it's oppression everywhere. And it's like, okay, bad guys and good guys. And we can fall into that, right? And there's plenty, to me, there's like plenty of other stories that show, no, life is way more complex than that. It's not just good guys and bad guys. You've got all this gray in between and people who are playing both sides. And that's fine. That's life is that too. And we need to learn how to navigate that. The moral grayness there. But for me, the vast majority and bulk of Star Wars is, no, there is a clear delineation between light and dark, so much so that those are the words that they use to describe the different sides of the Force. Mm-hmm. And it's the Force's wielders or believers who are like the key central figures of both of these governments or organizations, if you will. Right. And so you had this moment of like, there's moral grayness sort of a thing. And it's like, that's not Star Wars. I don't come to Star Wars to learn that. Like, I want to see good guys overcome evil and triumph because that's what I'm trying to do in my life. I can look other places for moral grayness type stories.
And I feel like that's what the arc is about. That's what the Finn arc is about. You just described to me the Finn arc, and I get it.
Because you are listening to Last Jedi, The Final Debate, I already know something about you. You care about stories that matter. Stories of courage, corruption, friendship, sacrifice, and the battle between light and darkness. So I want to invite you to my other show, The Lore of the Rings. It's a podcast exploring the world, wisdom, and wonder of J.R.R. Tolkien and The Lord of the Rings, which I think is the greatest fantasy story ever told. If you love deep dives and epic conversations, come wander Middle-earth with me. Visit ringspodcast.com and start your adventure.
Seeing that there's this like gray area in the universe, you know, both sides, I could see where like that could be uninteresting in the context of this movie. But ultimately, like, I guess by the end of the movie, like the stance is that the character's name is DJ. Like he's wrong. Like there is a right side. And so I sort of view, like, in the story arc, you have Rose, who I consider sort of the proxy of all the things that are like pure and good in the galaxy, coming from the lowest of the low, trying to do good to to the full spectrum of people and creatures, like, and does it like also like a proxy for like love in this case.
Like a rose.
Like a rose.
Like a rose. Blossom. Yeah. A fresh, beautiful, clean blossom. Yeah.
And DJ, who they find in prison, is pitching this sort of appealing like gray area where it's like, well, look, this, the good side is just as bad as the bad side. And like, that's a, to me, that's a temptation, right? He's had, Rose just barely showed him, like, look at the abuse that these people, look closer, like underneath this glamorous city, there's a lot of corruption. And he's like seeing it. Then they escape and there's an opportunity to choose, like, maybe I shouldn't work with Rose. Maybe I, and this is where like he begins to buy in to like complete the mission for his friends. And I don't think he's like maybe totally there yet, but I think that was like the temptation. It's like, look, it doesn't matter what you choose. They're the same. But then the stance at the end is that like, no, I'm fully bought in.
So when
there
do you
is
think
it, a bad side.
When do you think is the moment where Finn finally does say, no, there are two sides and I'm choosing one? Because it kind of feels like, okay, they run into a codebreaker. He knows how to get in. They sneak in. And then they're trapped, and DJ, I did not know that that was his name. DJ betrays them.
Stands for don't join.
Okay, there you go.
Maybe that's just what his casting character.
Don't join.
Yeah.
Don't join. Okay, yeah, that's his line. Don't join. He betrays them. They have the fight in the hangar bay, and they happen to escape. You know, all the bad guys die, but the two good guys and their droid survive into a shuttle. Like, when is the moment that Finn is like, oh, yeah, I really do need to stand up to my principles and choose a side?
So from my perspective, and we could probably debate this even, I think Phasma is a personal vendetta.
Yeah. Traitor!
I don't think that is like, oh, I'm doing this for the Resistance. I think Finn's doing that for Finn, right? I think he's seeking to complete the mission out of loyalty to his friends, you know?
Well, to Rey.
Loyalty to Poe. To Rey, I know that he calls himself Rebel Scum, like he's picked a side and he's joined, but the way that I read it is that he has that moment where he thinks the right thing to do is to drive this thing into the Death Star laser beam that's shooting into the wall and crate. When Rose interrupts that and gives her line, like, save what you love, don't fight what you hate, I feel like that was probably the turning point, because I view her as sort of, like I said, the sort of the proxy of the rebellion, all the things that are good, to that are worth fighting for. And then in the end, it shows that he's no longer as interested in like worrying about Rey and all that. And he's actually just like looking after Rose, who's like a conscious, which I view as like, now he's bought into the Resistance. Like he's bought into caring for something that's not about him anymore.
So I guess that would be, that brings a different level to, I think I complained in yesterday's episode that there's no like heroic moments, and like the most heroic thing that Finn was about to do, Rose stopped him from doing that. But you're looking at that and saying, oh no, like he pulls her back into the base, he brings her back in, and it was Rose's daring sacrifice that finally brought Finn and pushed him over the edge to say, yeah, I've fully bought into the rebellions, to the Resistance side now. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, to me, that's the completion of his conversion arc.
Okay, all right. Well, okay, Matt, maybe you might be surprised, but I think I might be starting to buy a little bit of the whole Finn growth thing here going on. But I have at least one more gripe. Maybe there's more, but there's another gripe that I have with this storyline. And it begins when they're trying to figure out how do we break into a First Order, you know, ship. And they call, what's her name? Maz? Is it Maz? And she's like, you need the master codebreaker. He's got this red palm bloom at a table at Cantobite. And when I first watched the movie and I first heard that, I thought, well, what if he's not there? What if he's on a job? What if he died? What, like,
Like, what if someone else is wearing a...
What if somebody else is there? Like, that's a very specific thing. And it's like, oh, so they go there. They don't find him. They kind of find a guy, but is that actually the guy? But then they get arrested. And then they just so happen to land in a jail cell with a guy who's exactly what they need, but he doesn't match the description at all of what Moss gave them. And so there's a term in literature. Sorry, I keep coming back to this, but it's called Deus ex machina, right? Or like God intervenes. And it's these moments in a story that just seem like completely... It's way too convenient. Way too convenient, as if like a God just put out his hand and just bloop, there it is, right? And okay, maybe there's function for that in Star Wars world where we're like, hey, the Force is guiding them. The Force is having, da, 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 you know, but there was just kind of this whole like, well, finding that specific person at that specific place at that specific time per Maz's instructions was extremely unlikely in the first place. And then they just happened to land in a jail cell out of all of the jail cells that were there that with the same guy who could do it. And get them there and get them all the way to the end of the mission. Well, it just felt too contrived.
But how did that pan out for them?
It did not, right? But it didn't pan out for them, not because he didn't have the skills to do their mission, but you know, because he ended up giving his services to the higher bidder.
Right.
But it was just like, did they need this master code breaker that Maz was talking about, or did they just need to run into some random dude somewhere at some point at some time?
I mean, it's valid. I feel like I would tend to agree with it more if they succeeded, because then it's like, oh yeah, we happen to be in here with this guy who can do everything. But it's like, they actually didn't do themselves any favors by meeting him and going down that route. Like, yes, he did have the skill set, which you could say is convenient, but it didn't, to the end of like getting what they needed, it was not, right? And I actually think that feeling, the feeling that you had about, oh, they're supposed to meet this guy with this master code breaker, and then they magically meet this other guy in the jail cell. I feel like those are the exact feelings that Holdo felt when Poe was explaining the mission to her. Like, this is what they're gonna go do.
A stormtrooper doing what now?
We were told that there's someone at this table they're going to go find, and he's going to be able to get them onto this thing. And she's like, what the heck are you guys? You bet all of this stuff on that? Like, I feel like it's a shared feeling that we're supposed to have, because the first time watching this movie, and I don't know how you felt about it, but like, I was number one all the way with Poe. So I'm like, who is this Admiral Holdo getting in the way of everything? Because yeah, exactly. I feel like we gravitate towards the cool pilot who like Poe's likable, he's charismatic. It's like, we're going to follow this guy to the end of the earth. And so like, she's getting in our business. Like, who does she think she is? Yeah, we don't even know who she is.
Yeah.
But like in retrospect, when like upon rewatches, it is funny because like, who are we to think that this plan was ever going to be good? And really like the Canto Bight arc, if anyone's failure, it's Poe's failure, right? It's another learning cog that he has trying to overtake this mission, sending his friends off with impossible odds to go complete this thing, and it doesn't end up panning out.
Dude, you just struck me. You just struck me. If it was anybody's failure, it was Poe's failure for encouraging this, for allowing it, for making it happen. Not only was it for Finn to grow as a character and fully join the Resistance, but Poe needed to learn some humility and fail. And he does have that moment. There is that moment where he's sitting on the bridge right before Leia walks in, and he's like, they failed? They didn't do it? They're captured? You know? And it's like, man, if killing your whole bomber squad wasn't enough, Poe, then now you've got this. And it's like, and your then he realizes, friend. He's like, I have this pattern of making terrible leadership decisions. Like, maybe I need to be humble a little bit here. So... okay, wow. I had never considered it in that light before, Matt. And I think maybe I could watch this again and see a little bit different in how that story plays out.
Okay.
I don't know if I can say that you convinced me entirely. I'd have to go watch it again.
Well, if I had, we wouldn't have a podcast, would we?
We wouldn't have a podcast anymore. I got plenty other gripes we could bring up. That's fine. But, but with this storyline in particular, looking at it as Finn's growth, into actually picking a side and to stop being a coward and a runner. And Poe's growth of, I need to stop failing as a leader and make more humble, careful decisions. And Rose sort of representing all that is good and right about the resistance and the light side, and helping Finn push to that side. I think you've presented a great case, Matt. And I don't know if I'm fully convinced yet, but my mind is open to the possibility.
That's about all I can ask.
All right, well, let's chalk this up to Matt has almost convinced Aaron that this is actually a decent storyline in this movie.
I think so.
And maybe I'll go review
it. Yeah, why not?
Maybe I'll be convinced. But let's chalk it up there.
This episode is sponsored by Bragboard. There's a weird problem a lot of high performers have. The better you are at your job, the more your work becomes invisible. You solve problems early, you unblock teams quietly, you prevent fires that never get seen. And then review season comes, and it looks like you just did your job. That's why I use Bragboard. It helps you capture those moments as they happen and turn them into clear, outcome-driven stories. So your impact is actually understood, not just assumed. Bragboard. Make your work visible. Start your 42-day free trial at bragboard.work. That's bragboard.work.